Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, I hope everyone out there is enjoying a glorious Resurrection Sunday. I know we are here at the McBurney compound. As we come to you from the boiler room, look forward to helping to straighten you people out on the news of the day. That's all. I guess that's for my enemies. My friends are fairly straight. In fact, all my friends are straight. No laughter from the peanut gallery. My extremely attractive audio engineer is otherwise engaged in work around the McBurney compound. But she's taken time out of her busy farm schedule to come in and work the board for the worldview, and we sure do appreciate having her on board. Also, she's very attractive. So now I'm distracted. I'm not sure where I was. Glorious Resurrection Sunday. This is the Sunday when all the heathens and the pagans pay lip service to the fact that Jesus Christ is real. He is the Savior. And he did rise from the dead, but it's just lip service with those people. Here at the McBurney compound, we actually worship the Lord and acknowledge the fact that he did rise from the dead, and we thank God for it. And I hope you did the same today. And in hopes of just keeping spirits lifted, we want to open with something uplifting here on the Worldview. So we'll go to Philadelphia, believe it or not. Yes, Philadelphia, March 22nd, a man opened fire on children and adults in a Philadelphia barbershop. An armed citizen walking by the barbershop heard the gunshots, ran inside, and shot the gunman. The perp was transported to the hospital, where he died from his wounds, and immediately met the aforementioned Jesus Christ, Lord, Savior, and in this case, Judge of all the earth. And all the people said, Amen. That's right. So we start out with a happy story. Oh, no one else was injured or even wounded. And police say this could have been a mass shooting. They said that this crazed gunman started just firing at random at everyone in this barbershop. Fortunately, no one was hit, and an armed citizen put an end to it. Thank heaven, and praise the Lord for handguns. We thank God that he gave humanity the gray matter and the ability to construct handguns so that we could kill bad guys with them. Yes. So we want to. They didn't say who this fellow was. He's probably doesn't want any acknowledgement. He probably feels bad about the fact he had to kill a guy. But we're thankful that no one else was injured. And our spirits are lifted once again upon hearing the good news that yet another bad guy has been introduced to Jesus Christ. And on Easter weekend, what could be more appropriate than to mention that fact? So, but we'll move immediately into the war file because, well, there's an awful lot going on related to the wars and rumors of wars and everything like that. And from WorldNet Daily, we have a very disturbing report. Al-Shabaab, the Somali branch of the Islamic State, of Al-Qaeda, of Iran, of militant radical Islam, Al-Shabaab, this past week released a graphic video showing executions of unarmed civilians identified on the video as Christians at an unnamed location on the Somali coast. The victims in the video are forced to kneel at the ocean's edge before being shot to death from behind. Other victims are marched out into the sea by the fanatical murderers and shot at like fish in a barrel, so to speak. At which point, these victims were also introduced to Jesus Christ, but under very different circumstances than the maniac from Philadelphia. These are the modern Christian martyrs all over North Africa and the Middle East, and we pray for them here at the McBurney compound every day, and I hope you'll do the same. What else? Al-Shabaab has targeted Christians for death. WorldNet Daily reports, particularly those in neighboring Kenya, where over 80% of the population identifies as Christian. In December, 36 Kenyan quarry workers were systematically executed by militants when they were unable to recite the Islamic Shahada. That's what these maniacs do. They get these Christians on their knees and ask them to recite whatever the Shahada is. I don't even know what it is. I wouldn't be able to recite it. Of course, I would never get down on my knees in front of an Islamist with a rifle or a knife. I just wouldn't get on my knees. No. And I think that Jesus is okay with that. I don't think he expects us to get on our knees and be shot from behind or beheaded. I think he'd be okay with us fighting tooth and nail with the Muslim fanatics and making them kill us like a man. I think Jesus would be just fine with that. So the ones who were not able to recite the Islamic Shahada amongst the 36 Kenyan quarry workers were shot. The month before, back in November, Al-Shabaab stopped a bus headed to Nairobi, separated out the non-Muslims, and executed 28 people summarily on the side of the highway. In September 2013, Al-Shabaab killed at least 67 people in an attack on the Nairobi Westgate shopping mall. We all remember that, one of the most horrifying terrorist attacks in history. Back to the video of the Christians being marched into the sea and shot in the back of the head. A masked man is seen in the most recent video mentioning the Mall of America. The Mall of America, I said, along with a photograph of the shopping center and its GPS coordinates. So we know what their plans are. Sure, I know Barry said they're just JV. And maybe that's true. Maybe they are just JV. But their plans are varsity plans. And their plans are to operate here in America. And so they must be stopped with extreme prejudice. But I don't know that we have the wherewithal to do it. And that's very depressing. And frankly, it's embarrassing. Let's go from the rumors of war. Well, that was the war file. That is the war file. And this is the war file. Terrorists stormed a university in eastern Kenya. At least 147 people were slaughtered. 80 others were wounded during the siege at Garissa University. The siege ended after the four attackers detonated their suicide vests. The attackers, again, were setting Muslims free and holding Christians hostage. A number of the students there at Garissa University were beheaded. Al-Shabaab again has claimed responsibility. The U.S. said it condemned the latest attack in the strongest terms. Yeah, this is from Sky News over in Britain, and I think that's an appropriate way to phrase the response from the Barry Ho administration. They say they condemn it in the strongest terms. But now they show no proof that they condemn it in the strongest terms. You know, like dispatching military forces to wipe Al-Shabaab from the face of the earth, which is what needs to happen. But they do condemn it in the strongest terms. Whatever those terms are relatively undefined and somewhat nebulous and open to interpretation, I suppose. The strongest terms for me would be a little different than they are for the girls over at the State Department and the Department of Defense. Yeah, they're much different. Now into the rumors of war's file. The Free Beacon is reporting that just hours after the announcement of what the United States characterized as a historic agreement with Iran, within just hours, Iran's leading negotiator involved in the talks with the Barry and Kerry show there in Switzerland. Yes, that's Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif. Well, he lashed out at Barry and all the hoes for lying about the details of the tentative framework. And I love this. The Free Beacon must have some real reporters still working there. It's interesting. They define the deal, the supposed deal that Barry made. They say the announcement of what the United States characterized as an historic agreement. Yes. Because, well, they're not really sure it is an historic agreement. But they are sure that it has been characterized that way by the Barry and Kerry show and others involved in helping Iran get their nuclear bomb. Yes, and so the Iranian foreign minister says that Barry lied about the details, and he accused the Obama administration of misleading the American people and Congress. Zarif bragged that the United States agreed to let it continue the enrichment of uranium, which we found out later is true. He also said that the agreement will mean all nuclear-related sanctions will be lifted. We found out that was true, too. And that Iran would not be forced to shut down any of its currently operating nuclear installations. When you fact-check that, what Mr. Zarif is bragging about, we find out that that's true as well. Zarif said, quote, "We will continue enriching. We will continue research and development. We will have centrifuges installed at Fordo, but not enriching. No, those will not enrich. That is, of course, if the framework agreement goes forward. We have basically agreed to make a deal, to continue talking and working towards a deal that could lead to negotiations that lead to a framework deal that could eventually lead to a deal. All the while, we will continue enriching uranium," said Mr. Zarif. And we found out all that's true, too. There really was no deal. There was just a deal to keep talking. And I'm convinced that's all the Iranians want, is just to keep talking and keep enriching, keep working toward their nuclear bomb. Yes, he says, "We will have centrifuges installed at Fordo, but not enriching." No, these will be for making our bomb later. He said that under his breath, or I might have made that up. I may have just inferred that, and that slipped out. So this is an historic week. There's no doubt about that. This is the week last week, today being Sunday, Resurrection Sunday of all Sundays. Last week will be forever remembered as the week that America surrendered to Iran on the idea of Iran becoming a nuclear power. It was the official surrender. Now, we'd all suspected it for some time, but last week was the official surrender. And there will be an even more official surrender in June if the negotiators are able to reach some sort of framework before Tel Aviv is struck with a nuclear bomb. We'll just see about that. Oh, by the way, a report out of the Washington Times related to this Iranian nuclear, American nuclear capitulation to the Aryans. I'm sorry, the Iranians. Did I say Aryans? I meant Iranians. The Washington Times reports that this alleged accord that was reached with Iranian negotiators was silent on the fate of three American prisoners being held in Iranian jails. You remember we've talked about these three. Journalist Jason Rezaian, Christian pastor Saeed Abedini, and former U.S. Marine Amir Hekmati are all being held in an Iranian prison. And I would have thought that if the Secretary of State was meeting with the Iranian foreign minister and trying to work out a deal to avoid war, that perhaps, and since we ended up basically saying we're willing to continue talking and allowing you to enrich uranium, could you give us our prisoners back? But apparently it never even came up. Although I think John Kerry says, John Kerry insisted that the U.S. side brings up the prisoner's fate in every meeting with the Iranian leaders. He says they bring it up every time, right after the coffee. First thing, right? That's what he says. He says we bring it up every time, which would lead me to believe that, well, they're just laughing at you, John. It's really a proof of how weak you are. You bring it up every time and they just ignore you, and you still sit at the table, drink coffee with these maniacs, and continue to negotiate with them. He says, John Kerry, I will continue to press for the prisoners' release, and this nuclear agreement may make that task even easier, says John Kerry, in a state of complete delusion. Yes, John says the conversation is continuing, and in an interview he said, we call on Iran again today to release these Americans. And then they didn't. And Kerry capitulated anyways and said, well, okay, we'll keep talking. We'll let you have your bomb. We'll let you keep our prisoners. Please, sir, don't hurt me. My name is Doug McBurney, and this is the Weekly Worldview. Thank you so much for tuning in again this glorious Resurrection Sunday. Welcome back. We continue in the war file, as we must. I know, perhaps it gets depressing. Perhaps you think I'm obsessed. After all, I called the show last week World War III. That's how I feel. I feel it's coming. I feel the oppressive weight of war. A report last week in the Jerusalem Post tells us that Rabbi Shlomo Riskin has compared U.S. President Barack Obama to Haman. Haman, I said. Are you not familiar with Haman? If you're not familiar with Haman, you need to read your Bible a little bit more. Now, where would they find the story of Haman? Now, that's embarrassing if I can't at least give them the book. I'll tell you what. It's in the Old Testament. Start at Genesis and start reading. And eventually, you'll get to Haman. Okay? That's enough. I don't want to give you chapter and verse. So, anyway, he's compared him to Haman. And he's compared Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to Mordecai. Yes. He was speaking at the Jerusalem Great Synagogue. Riskin is an American-born rabbi and is very influential amongst the conservatives there in Israel. He says he cannot understand what is going through Obama's mind. He says the President of the United States is lashing out at Israel just like Haman lashed out at the Jews. He says, I'm not making a political statement. Let me be clear, I'm making a Jewish statement. I guess comparing the president to Haman, well, that's very Jewish indeed. And appropriate, I think. Now, when a woman in the audience shouted out at the rabbi that he was being disrespectful to the U.S. president, she was loudly booed by the crowd. And she had to exit the room, slunken shoulders and just embarrassed. Riskin said he didn't need any help from the audience. He says, I'm being disrespectful because the president of the United States was disrespectful to my prime minister, my country, to my future, and to the future of the world. And the crowd went wild, as you can well imagine. Riskin drew an analogy between the conquest of Babylonia by ancient Persia and the armed conflict between Iran and Iraq. In relation to Iran, he said the only difference between Iran and the Islamic State was who would be using power to control the world. Very insightful. Absolutely true. The Islamic State in Iraq and Syria is just another side of the same coin of the Islamic State founded in 1979 in Iran. Also, the Western Values Network, founded by and run by American rabbi Shmuley Botiek, took out a full-page ad in the New York Times this past week comparing the deal being drawn up with Iran to the Munich Agreement signed in 1938 by British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain, guaranteeing peace in our time on the eve of the invasion of Poland by Adolf Hitler and the beginning of World War II. That was the last World War. And it started out something like this, what's happening now. Now, I know Iran is not Germany. They're not the most advanced technological civilization, or at least not among the most advanced civilizations on the planet. The Germans were amazingly advanced technologically, financially, culturally. The Iranians are 6th-century maniacs trying, I think they're trying to speed up the return of the Mahdi, the 12th Imam, or is it the 13th Imam? I forget. You lose count with it's their Antichrist. Or wait a second, it's our Antichrist. It's their Christ, and they're trying to usher in the return of the Mahdi, the 12th Imam, and saying World War II is the way they want to do it. But the difference between Iran and the Germans is that the Islamic world is much larger than was the German dictatorship. They have a much larger population and more young men to feed into the war machine should the Islamic State be united under that pirate flag banner that flies over the Islamic State as they behead innocent women, children, and shoot Christians in the back of the head. Should the Islamic State become united by the terrorists, they will be a formidable force. And that's why that must be prevented with extreme prejudice and perhaps even nuclear weapons. I hate to say that, but that may become necessary. Deeper into the war file, Greece is drawing up plans to nationalize the country's banking system. Why is this in the war file? Well, folks, this is how wars start. Somebody eventually runs out of actual money and credit, and people eventually cannot print any more money. And since all of the banks and the financial institutions have been dubbed by central banks around the world as too big to fail, well, they're not going to fail. Citibank is not going to fail. Deutsche Bank is not going to fail. But a country is going to fail. And when countries fail, well, that usually leads to civil war or some other type of armed military conflict. And Greece is preparing to nationalize their banking system unless the Eurozone softens its demands. Basically, Greece wants out of its debt. It wants to pay back just pennies on the dollar. And there's no one else who can write and print fake money that will convince the European central bankers that they're not getting ripped off by Greece. And so it could lead to war. Funds are running critically low in Greece. Greece may be forced to take the unprecedented step of missing a payment to the International Monetary Fund this week. We will have to see. Greece no longer, they say they no longer have enough money to pay make the IMF payment of about $500 million. And they can't do that and cover payments for salaries, Social Security, and all the grotesquely obscene pensions that they've promised their workers for the better part of two generations. They're just running out of dough. And there's no one else willing to lend them any money. And it's a crisis. And that's why I put this in the war file. I suppose it should be in the rumors of war file. So they can't keep their social welfare payments programs going and pay the debt that their social welfare programs have built up. And I chuckle a little bit, but it's actually terrifying. The new government there, basically communists, the Syriza party, a senior official there says, "We are a left-wing government. If we have to choose between a default to the IMF or a default to our own people, well, it's a no-brainer. We are going to default to the IMF." And well, once that happens, I suppose it will be interesting to see, since it hasn't happened before. The view in Athens, by the way, is that the EU creditors will have to make real concessions to prevent a rupture of the monetary union, an outcome that the EU has ruled out repeatedly as unthinkable. They say it's simply unthinkable that the EU could lose a member or break or fall apart. Well, I think it's somewhat less than unthinkable. In fact, it could start this week when Greece defaults And then all bets are off. Things go crazy when the confidence game that is our current financial situation, when the confidence game runs out and someone loses real confidence and then someone else starts losing real money and then someone else gets really, really angry. And then maybe the Greek socialist and Nazi types, well, it just could be a very ugly situation. Very ugly what's happening in Europe. But the financial crisis is, I believe, merely a symptom of a deep spiritual problem throughout Europe and the Western world. And I'm going to go to my prediction that I made last week, or it may have been the week before, when the German Wings pilot crashed that plane into the French Alps. I don't know if I made the prediction on the show or maybe just to my extremely attractive. Oh, I did. Not just to you. Because I say a lot of things to you, and then I think I've said them to everyone. I do. All my crazier predictions, some of my more radical statements, are just between me and my extremely attractive audio engineer. Now I'm distracted again. What were we talking about? Oh, my prediction about the German pilot. The prediction I made was that the crash of that plane would be, it would have more to do with sexual immorality than it would have to do with terrorism. Now, I made that bold prediction as soon as I found out that the German pilot's name was not Mohammed or Mahmoud or Abdul or anything like that. Because I had a feeling that a suicidal German pilot, who's actually a German and not a recent Middle Eastern import, would probably be the result of Europe's collapse into utter sexual immorality and the people who are killed as a result of sexual immorality, which is a lot of people. Well, I've got a report here from the Daily Mail that has sort of been scrubbed over the past week. This came out early in the week. The Daily Mail reported that the killer co-pilot who deliberately crashed the German Wings plane into the French Alps had been trawling gay porn websites in the days before his death. And now the report goes on. A police source in Dusseldorf was quoted. He told International Business Times that investigators have been going through the killer pilot's internet usage. He said this police source in Dusseldorf was quoted earlier in this past week, saying that we have a team disassembling his computer and that of his girlfriend. He trawled the dark side of the web, visiting, among other things, sites containing suicide themes and sexual perversions. At which point the reporters gathered, looked at each other, and said to the police officer, "What's that?" He said, "Well, you know, he was trawling sites with..." They said, "No, what's sexual perversion?" So he had to explain to them. That's a word that's fallen out of favor. Now it's just called LGBT and cohabitation. So after the gathered media were clued in as to what sexual perversion means, then they understood that he had been trawling, well, homosexual pornography sites and other perverted sites. Also, Lubitz was reportedly, and suicide-themed sites. Lubitz was reportedly the subject of gossip about his sexuality at work after a brief spell working as a flight attendant. Well, that would, if someone works as a flight attendant, that gets my gaydar up. I'm like, okay. I've only met one straight flight attendant in my life, and I've flown like 1,000,006 miles. So I would be a bit suspicious. I would think that he was at least questioning, as the LGBT crowd says. Anyway, he was nicknamed Tomato Andy at work. Tomato is a gay slur based on the fact that although many people believe tomatoes to be vegetables, they are actually fruits. And so that's where that came from. So he was having some trouble at work related to sexuality. Let's see. It was revealed by police last week that Lubitz suffered from a severe psychosomatic sickness. Police said they took away a plethora of medicines from his apartment, antidepressants, no doubt. Police have moved to seize his medical records, which have hitherto been protected by a labyrinthine privacy laws, by the labyrinthine privacy laws in Germany. So everyone wonders, how did this guy slip under the radar? How come nobody knew that, oh, by the way, he had recently, where is it here? He had broken up with his girlfriend. Breakdown in his relationship with his longtime girlfriend. That means he was shacking up with some woman, and she left him to start shacking up with someone else, which is a very common occurrence in America, in Germany, all across Europe. It's a very common occurrence. And quite often people get killed in direct relation to the breakup of a shacking up type situation. The bottom line is he was actively engaged in various forms of sexual immorality, and he was losing his mind. He was going crazy. Because sex perverts are unstable. That's been known since the dawn of time. That sex perverts are unstable. And it also was known and fairly well accepted that sex outside of marriage is perverted and destabilizing. Yes, that's it. When the police in Dusseldorf explained sexual perversions to the reporters because they needed a refresher on that, most of them in the room realized that he was kind of talking about them. Because perversion is not necessarily a term of hatred or a derogatory term. It's a definition. It means to deviate from what is right. It's perverted. Sex outside of marriage is perverted and inherently destabilizing because it makes people go insane. And here's what's happened, what I believe happened to this young German pilot, and is happening to young men all over Western civilization every day. Young men are being taught by the pop culture that they can and should have sex with as many people as possible and that they can handle it. And in fact, it makes them more of a man's man if they can have sex with all kinds of women, and these days maybe even men, and just everywhere and anytime. If you can do it, you got to do it. You got to do it if you want to be a man. And you can handle it. And it's a lie. You cannot handle it. You were not made that way. I was not made that way. That's not the way God made us. And the farther we become unmoored from that reality, and the more we're unable to recognize and call perversion what it is, the more destabilized society will become, and the more innocent people will have to die. Welcome back. I am Doug McBurney, and how appropriate that a lead singer who's actually in hell right now would lead us into this next segment as we discuss one of God's most hated sins, and that is the sin of cowardice. And it was rampant this week. This past week. It was rampant this past week. And I even got a letter, an email from a listener in Connecticut who we will call Bob to protect his identity regarding the cowardice of Mike Pence, governor of Indiana, and others in the face of the homosexualist mafia. Bob wrote, "In the course of 1 week, we've gone from celebrating the courage of the Christian governor of Indiana signing a religious freedom bill into law over fierce opposition from the gay mafia to now mourning the cowardice of the apparently not-so-conservative Christian governor of Indiana agreeing to amend the bill and codify homosexual perversion as perverts as a protected class in Indiana. Governor Pence, says Bob from Connecticut, has proven himself to be a coward and a traitor. And it all seems like an elaborate April Fool's joke." Bob in Connecticut. Wow. So I got that letter the morning of, I believe it was April 2nd. And I had written the day before in my notes, my show prep, I had written the following sentence, verbatim. "Watching Indiana Governor Mike Pence cower and grovel in fear of speaking the truth about homosexuality and the homosexual mafia all week has been one of the worst displays of cowardice I have ever witnessed." Showing that, well, at the very least, that Bob and I are on the same page. So proving that there are still other people out there who have not lost their mind and gone completely insane. I want to thank Bob for just helping restore just a little bit of my faith in my fellow American. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate that. And, of course, we appreciate you listening. And you people can feel free to send me an email anytime. Generally, they do not get on the air. You have to really bring some big guns in order to make the broadcast. And Bob did just that. Of course, because Bob said better than I could have said what he said. And that rarely happens. So kudos to you, Bob. But it has been, well, I guess there's not much else I can add to what Bob said since he did say it better. Then Bob quotes Pence. Yeah, Pence said, quote, "I don't think anyone should ever be mistreated because of who they are or who they love." Basically bowing, cowering, quivering and asking forgiveness from the homosexualist mafia. That term, who you love, is it love to commit sexual perversion with another person? Is it love to destroy one another's bodies through unnatural sexual activity? Is that love? That's not love, Mr. Pence. To love someone is to warn them when they're destroying their lives and committing sexual immorality that will forever scar them and destroy their mind and their heart and their soul and their body. That's love. Bob had another quote in his email. Pence asked lawmakers to clarify language in the religious objections law. As businesses canceled conventions and governments banned travel to the state. You heard all this, right? The mayor of Denver got up in a news conference and said he was banning all non-essential government travel to Indiana and would find any other way he could stop doing business with the state of Indiana because the state of Indiana hates. Said, I don't even know what the mayor of Denver's name is. He's not even worthy of retaining any brain cells in my brain to remember who the guy is. Whatever his name is. Anyways, I don't even remember the guy's name. That's how small of a man he is. And were I Mike Pence, I would have stood up and said, "Mayor of Denver, you are officially banned from Indiana. You and all your pothead buddies are not allowed in my state. And in fact, anything we have in Indiana that we find out is from Denver, we're going to ship it back to your front yard. And we're going to dump it in your yard. You stay away from us, you perverted scumbag." had Mike Pence stood up to these antichrist forces who stood up and said, we're going to stop doing business, he should have stood up and said, Indiana can survive without all you people, you perverts. We are going to stand with what is right and true and what is codified in the First Amendment. And if you don't want to do that, then stay out of our state. We don't need you people here. We don't want people who want to overthrow our civilization visiting our state. Stay home. If we catch you on the ski slopes, we're going to beat you with ski poles and chase you across the border of Utah. Mike Pence would have been hailed as the conservative savior, the conservative political savior of the nation, had he stood up to the homosexual mafia when he had the opportunity. But he didn't. And not only Mike Pence, where's the other story? This other just disgusting display. Maybe I don't have it. I may have thrown it out. There was another governor, I believe of Oklahoma, who he preemptively, before the homos even started piling on him, so to speak, he had to rewrite a law that was just basically saying that we're going to try to keep the First Amendment. That's all the laws are trying to say. We're just going to try to keep the First Amendment. And here's what's a sad truth, a sad political truth. When you have to pass laws to establish religious freedom, you have already lost, because it was already established in the First Amendment. And Governor Pence and this other Republican, spineless Republican in Oklahoma, whose name I don't even remember because I could care less. You people have surrendered our God-given rights that were enshrined in the First Amendment already, and that's why you're having to pass these bills. You're trying to cover for the fact that you've already thrown out our freedom of religion. You've already allowed it to be trampled. And now you come and you try to write this, and the homosexuals won't even give you that. They come in and threaten to boycott your state, and you end up cowering in a corner, shivering, begging them to please stop. Unbelievable. Mike Pence and I don't know who the guy from Oklahoma is. Look at that. I threw the story away because it was so disgusting. I didn't want to depress myself with it. But as soon as the rights, the God-given rights enshrined in the First Amendment, as soon as they are declared up for debate, whoever says that should be arrested. Because the Ten Amendments to the United States Constitution, the reason they're in the Constitution is that they're not up for debate. We established that 200 and some odd years ago, I thought. They're not up for debate. These are the things we've agreed not to debate. These are the things enshrining these God-given rights. These are the things that have made America the greatest nation on the planet of Earth in the history of Earth. And they're not up for debate. And anyone who says they are up for debate should be arrested and charged with sedition. It should not be tolerated. You have the freedom to exercise your religion, which means you don't have to bake a cake for a couple of queers who are getting married. If the queers want to get married and bake a cake, I'm sure they can find some other deviant to bake them a cake. And then that's a whole other argument. Sexual perversion is criminal, by the way. And I'm not just talking about homosexuals. I'm talking about adultery. I'm talking about cohabitation, formerly known as fornication. These are criminal behaviors. And a society that decriminalizes them is bound for only one thing, and that is utter collapse and war. And that's where we're headed. let's at least give the one sort of a highlight in the story that gave us all a little bit of hope. Memories Pizza. In an interview, the owner of Memories Pizza just said, she said, look, we wouldn't cater a homosexual wedding because, you know, we're Christians. At which point she started getting death threats. And so Dana Lash sets up a GoFundMe campaign just to try to show the power that the normal people have. Folks, the normal people, and if you're listening to this show and you're not one of my enemies, you're one of my friends, then you're one of the normal people. And we do not have to let the perverts take over and run the culture, you people. What are we thinking about here? They're a small, mentally ill minority, hell-bent on killing themselves and as many other people as they can take with them. And we don't have to go along with that. There's a lot more of us than there are of them. The GoFundMe campaign started for the Memories Pizza. The lady had to shut her pizza shop down and go into hiding. She had to go stay with friends because homosexuals were threatening to kill her and burn her store down because she wouldn't send pizzas to their wedding. Well, the GoFundMe account raised $842,000 in 2 days. And now, by the way, just so we can all have a chuckle, an advocate for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered rights. You know, they could shorten that a lot just by saying an advocate for pervert rights, or no, sex pervert rights. That's only two words. And you don't have to go through like a lawyer and name every kind of pervert. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, questioning, gerbil affiliate, whatever. You don't have to go through all. Just call them sex perverts. Look, I'm an advocate for sex perverts. Why? Well, because I'm a sex pervert and I'm a lawyer. An advocate for the sex perverts has now set up a counter campaign on the GoFundMe site called Love is Stronger Than Hate. Yes, they launched that on GoFundMe on Friday. Today's Sunday. And so far they have raised $235 at the Love is Stronger Than Hate GoFundMe. So, folks, there's a lot more of us than there are of them. Why are we allowing 2% of the mentally ill sex perverts to drive the conversation of the entire nation for a week and to take over the government, our institutions of higher learning, our schools, our pop culture, the music industry, our government? Why are we letting 2% of mentally ill sex perverts take over the world? Well, I have a theory as to why the influence of the sex perverts is so strong. I think it's because of the normal people. It's because of us. Because if we, the normal people, practice sexual immorality, marital infidelity, and consume pornography, in doing so, we surrender our ability to recognize, condemn, work to eliminate perversion and perverts because we've become perverted ourselves. When the only people who know right from wrong are practicing wrong, there's no hope. Who's going to tell the evil that they're evil when the good people are practicing wickedness? Don't believe me, folks, there's a 50% divorce rate amongst heterosexuals. 30% of sexually active couples have murdered an unborn child. Pastors in mainstream churches condoning fornication, tolerating it amongst the flock. 40% of all internet traffic is pornography. Primarily heterosexual pornography. So the problem is with, well, the whole culture. And it's terrifying. And it leads to just outrageously crazy things that no one could have ever imagined could have ever happened like this, as reported from the Washington Post out of California. In 1987, Jeffrey Norsworthy was convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison. She is now being held at an all-male prison and demanding a sex change operation. Jeffrey was the... Yeah, don't get confused, because the reporter automatically credits this male murderer with the pronoun she throughout the rest of the story. So it gets a little confusing. Officials have urged that if this convicted murderer has the surgery, that keeping her in a men's prison could put her at risk for sexual assault, but moving her to a women's prison could put other inmates at risk because she has a history of domestic violence. So what are we supposed to do? Oh, by the way, yes, she also has a history of murder in addition to the domestic violence. So the state of California, the justice system, is tied in knots because of sexual immorality and the fact that we've legitimized perverted, illegal, criminal behavior. Well, it should be illegal. U.S. District Court Judge John S. Tigar in San Francisco granted a preliminary injunction telling the prison system that they must give this convicted murderer a sex change operation as promptly as possible. They have a quote here from his ruling. The judge, appointed by Barry Ho, by the way, not that that means much. This could have been a Bush judge. The judge says the only adequate medical treatment for her gender dysphoria is sexual reassignment surgery. Denying her the surgery would violate her constitutional rights. So outside the prison walls, the homosexual mafia tramples the First Amendment, destroys it. Forget it. Those God-given rights codified in the First Amendment, they're out. But this judge is sure to recognize the constitutional rights of a convicted murderer. Who, frankly, should have been put to death and introduced to Jesus Christ back in 1987. We have a quote here from a Republican. I just don't care. It's just pathetic. So the problem with conservatives is they can't come out and say sexual immorality should be illegal and it's inherently destabilizing and it gets people hurt and killed. You can't say that, I guess. Or maybe it's fear. Maybe they're afraid to say that. Maybe you can say that. Maybe if a leader would stand up and actually say it, he might find himself being lauded by more than a majority of the country and saying, thank you for finally stopping the madness. I mean, you'd think we'd draw the line somewhere when the queers demand that we bake them cakes and make them pizzas. Surely someone has to stand up and say, wait a minute, this has gotten way out of hand. Well, I stand up and say it. But I who am I? I don't know that it'll do any good. Another prediction, by the way, from the Rumors of War file. And I don't think I made this on the show, but someone tried to ram the gate at the National Security Administration. Two men dressed as women. You remember this story from early last week? I said at the time to a friend of mine, or perhaps to my extremely attractive audio engineer, I said, what was I talking about? Oh, the NSA. Two men dressed as women try to ram the gate with their truck at the NSA. One is shot. Well, they're both shot. One is killed. One is taken to the hospital. And I said that, what are the odds that these are, which is more likely? That these are two strung-out homosexuals, coked up and having a fight, crashing through the gate at NSA, or that they're Muslim terrorists in a burqa? And I said it's more likely that they're two coked-up homos who had a fight and just, lost control. Well, it turns out law enforcement officials have told Fox News that the two as-yet unidentified men may have been partying and under the influence of some kind of drugs before they stole the vehicle and crashed it into the gates. I know. Why are these two men as of yet unidentified? I don't understand that. How do we not know who these guys were a week later? I mean, one of them's dead. There's got to be a death certificate. That's a public record. Anyway. So Fox News reports this story, and you won't hear it anywhere else but here. You won't even hear this on Fox. This is buried somewhere on their website. So I'm sure that nut job over at InfoWars read this story. That's a false flag, Alex Jones. Oh, they're just going to say they were partying on cocaine, but it's the NSA. It's a false flag. They were setting up contrails so they could put fluoride in the water. False flag. I'm sure Alex Jones thinks that they were CIA operatives. But I think it was a couple of strung out, coked up homos, got into an argument, stole a car, whatever. That's far more likely in America than jihadis. Although the jihadis are coming. Don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't know that the jihadis are coming. But the coked up, strung out homos getting in fights, they're already here. They're everywhere. They're dangerous. All right. Now, we're almost out of time. That's unfortunate. I have some interesting stories from the science, really, file. Then I'll probably have to say, I'll do the first one here. This is from the science, really, file. A diminutive songbird weighing the equivalent of just 3 teaspoons of sugar can fly over the North Atlantic, resolving a 50-year-old mystery. The white-throated, black-capped blackpoll warbler migrates each autumn from New England to South America. This is how incredible God is. He made this, and this is just one little thing that he made. He made all kinds of stuff like this. For half a century, according to the Telegraph in London, for half a century, scientists have debated whether the birds fly nonstop over the ocean or take breaks on land to carry out this marathon flight. Well, scientists hook flight recorders to 40 of these birds, and that experiment has now provided irrefutable evidence that the birds do it all in one go. They don't take any breaks. They fly over the ocean for between 1,400 and 1,700 miles. That's just cool. Now, that is real science. Yep, I like that. Now, these other stories, why is Denver a mile high? I'm going to have to save that. Strange radio bursts from... I'm going to participate in the broadcast over at KLTT tomorrow on Bob Enyart's show in the afternoon on the 50,000-watt AM blowtorch. What a gospel! And so I'll try to talk Bob into letting me do a couple of these stories, because he likes science. From the Justice File, we're almost out of time, but I've got to get this in. The LA Times reports that with no executions in nearly a decade, and newly condemned men arriving each month to death row, the nation's largest death row in California has run out of room. There are so many old geezers in death row in California, they've got more problems with arthritis, bursitis, liver ailments, yes, bad knees, sex change operation. There's so many of them that they've run out of room. And now Governor Jerry Brown, which it just shocks me to say that every time, Governor Jerry Brown, I have a flashback to 1972. Governor Jerry Brown is asking the California legislature for several million dollars to open up 100 more cells for condemned men at San Quentin. Yes. You remember California had to halt executions back in 2006 when a federal judge ruled, I forget, just some anti-death penalty judge, some liberal piece of garbage. And then a federal judge ruled last July. This is California, right? So they had to stop executions back in 2006 for one reason or another. And last July, a federal judge ruled that the state's interminably slow capital appeals system is unconstitutional and cruel and unusual punishment. I think we talked about that when that happened, and the irony of it all. But there, California's death row is running out of room, and Jerry Brown's solution, instead of executing justice upon these vile murderers and introducing them to the resurrected Jesus Christ, he's just going to borrow more money to build more prison cells. And why does Jerry Brown do this? Because he's a pervert. He can't condemn another man to death with everything he's done that's on his mind and the guilt, the unresolved sin issues in Jerry Brown's psyche. He could never condemn another man to death because he's just as bad as they are, and he knows it deep in his dark little heart. All right. speaking of the fruit of the perverts, this is from CBS in New York. Police have arrested a woman after her one-year-old son was found unconscious in the bathroom of a Midtown Manhattan restaurant. A worker at the restaurant became concerned after noticing that the woman and the child were in the bathroom for an unusual amount of time. The worker entered the bathroom and saw the boy unconscious on the woman's lap. The woman told the worker, quote, "I put my hand over his mouth to put him to sleep." So the worker called the police. Sources say that later the mother, who murdered her child, later said, quote, "The devil made me do it." The devil made it do it. The devil made it a lot easier for her to do it. And the perverts made it a lot easier for her to do it. But it's the vacuum, the spiritual vacuum in the church and in the public square, frankly, that made it a lot easier for this woman to choose this way to solve her problem. All right, that's just... I don't want to end on a... let's finish in the politics file, because I heard a conservative talk show host this past week say that, well, this email scandal is probably going to be the end of Hillary Clinton's campaign. It's probably going to damage her so severely that, well, she'll not be able to run for president because of the email scandal that we both talked about. And as if to mock that alleged conservative talk show host, Politico released this story just at the end of this past week. The Justice Department will not seek criminal contempt charges against former IRS official Lois Lerner over the emails she hid and destroyed, and how the tax agency improperly targeted conservative political groups, and basically her contempt of Congress charge is going to be ignored by the Justice Department. Why? Well, because they're all on the same side, the side of the perverts. And the perverts have taken over. And so Lois Lerner can destroy servers and claim she doesn't have any emails in. She won't be prosecuted. And so Hillary won't be. Hillary's like, what email scandal? What are you people talking about? Email scandal. Get out of here. It's child's play for Hillary Clinton. Oh, but the FBI did make sure to let it remind everyone that Lois Lerner and other IRS officials are still under investigation. There's still an investigation going on. And so that pretty much means, well, nothing, actually. Means nothing. It means that the suicidal children who have taken over the levers of power will be allowed to continue to operate, and Hillary Clinton may or may not be elected as their leader, but she will certainly not run into any trouble from anyone over the fact that she lied right to all of us right in our face and hid her emails and laughed. That's what she did. And of course, she will get away with it in this world, but not in the next. That's it for this week, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, Theology Online, AmericanRightToLife.com, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.